Hello, this is Dr. Tim Kearney. Welcome to our forum tonight. I am the Chief Behavioral Health Officer of the Community Health Center, a statewide network of primary care centers across Connecticut, providing medical, dental, and behavioral health services. You can find more about us at our website, chc1.com. I'm a psychologist with a specialization in child and family work. I've been doing trauma work for about 30 years, and we hope that this call tonight will help you better know how to talk with your children and your life about the recent tragedy in Sandy Hook, and also to help you better manage your own responses as well. And with me tonight is my colleague, Elizabeth Sestero, who is a licensed social worker at one of our school-based health centers. In the next hour, I'll have a brief presentation about children and trauma, focusing especially on talking to your children, common issues that may arise for your children at various ages as they deal with their responses to what happened, and how best to manage your own responses so you can be there for the children. And after the presentation, we'll open up lines so that you may ask questions. But remember, if at any point during our presentation tonight you do have questions, please dial 0 and speak with our operator, who will take your questions and get them to me. I'd like to start by expressing our sympathy to those of you in and around Newtown and throughout the state who have been impacted personally by this recent tragedy. All of us as parents and those who work with children wish that we could protect them from the knowledge of tragedies that occur in the world around them and from the impact that this knowledge has on them. Unfortunately, we just can't do that, especially in this age of constant news feeds and social media. So therefore, we have to help them develop the skills to cope with what happened and structure their world to make their response as manageable and as possible for them. Now, like adults, children need accurate information about what happened. Give them facts that are known, and as we know more, correct the facts. Give them more details as more information becomes available. Deliver this information in age-appropriate ways. Young children are just going to need the basics. Someone came into a school in Sandy Hook and shot people, and some adults and children were hurt and died. Now, be guided by their response as to how much information to give beyond that. And older children are more curious. They're going to ask more questions. Again, let their interests guide you. I've had the opportunity over the past few days to talk to parents in Danbury, in Middletown, where I do my clinical work, in Groton and in Meriden, as well as to lead daily phone calls talking with our behavioral health staff who are working with parents and children across the state. And so the first thing I want to say to you parents out there is you are doing a great job. No one knows your kids better than you do. And I've been tremendously impressed at how well parents have been doing talking to their kids and helping our children deal with their responses to what's happened. On Friday, we posted a guide to talking with children about the recent shootings on our webpage, chc1.com. And there are lots of good resources there as guides to parents. And I expect that by now most of you have already had one or more talks with your children. If you haven't, I urge you to do so tonight. They are hearing about what's happened, whether at school or with other kids, and they need to know that it's okay to talk to you about that, about what happened. And you need to model with them that we as adults have resources to deal with what's happened and teach them by your example. The National Child Traumatic Stress Network recommends 6 things to keep in mind when talking with younger children. And they're actually good points for kids of all age, and I just want to go over them with you so you can have this in mind as you talk to your children. The first thing is to focus on safety. Your child needs to feel safe. So hold them, hug them lots, let them tell you when things are scary or frightening to them, let them know mommy's here, daddy's here, grandma's here, whoever it is. Keep them away from frightening TV images and scary conversations, especially the younger kids we know, even now when there are images on the screen about what happened, interviews with families, interviews with children. Younger kids are going to look at that and they're going to think it's happening again. How many schools is this happening in? And it's important, first of all, to give them the information, it happened, it's over, it's done, and you're safe. But also, just keep the TVs off. Do something else with your family that everybody enjoys. There's only so much information we need, and children need even less. And remember as we go on tonight that if you have questions or comments about anything that you hear, things you want to ask us, you may push zero and at any time, and the questions will be delivered to us to respond. So along with the issue about safety, it's great to get kids back to their usual routine. Some parents have asked about should kids be going back to school and how soon should kids be going back to school. And kids should be returned to school as soon as possible, return to all the other routines in your life, because having those routines is healing and comforting and reassuring to children and frankly to us as well as adults. If you need to leave your children with someone, sitter or whatever the situation is in your life, make sure they know you're coming back, when you're coming back, and stick to that word, whatever it is, so they don't get frightened. And again, the emphasis on safety, that they're safe, that you're safe. Second point, in addition to safety, is to allow expressions of feelings. And I say expressions, not talking about feelings, because very often when children behave badly, quote-unquote, you know, they're doing the things we don't want them to be doing, it's because they're worried or they're scared. Children will act out sometimes as a way of asking for help. So just remember for kids that a difficult feeling very often equals difficult behavior. So especially for your younger kids, maybe 6 and 7 and under, give them some words. I wonder if you're feeling scared. I wonder if you're feeling frightened. I wonder if you're feeling sad. Help them learn how to talk about it, because it's not something they necessarily know. Certainly, even for kids who have mastered skills and move through developmental stages, a terrible trauma like this one can push kids back, can cause regression, can make them act younger. So it's a trial and a challenge for us as parents not to get angry when a child who's already mastered words or already mastered toilet training or already mastered going to bed without an argument or whatever it is appears to be 6 months backwards in time. And it's a temporary response to trauma and fear and stress, and you know, give them a break and remember that. Show your child the right way to behave. Statements like it's okay to be angry, and this is how we handle it. It's okay to be frightened. Grown-ups are frightened. Mommy and daddy get frightened. Grandma gets frightened. But here's what we do when we're frightened. And talk about things that are going well. Talk about the positive things. So that's under first safety and then expression of feelings. The third point I mentioned already, follow your child's lead. Children are different. Some kids are going to want to talk. Some are not going to want to talk. Either answer is okay. You open the door and see if they want to follow through, and if so, great. If not, maybe they will at some point in the future. Wanted to remind you again, and I will be frequently as we go forward tonight, that if you do have questions that you want to ask us, please dial the 0 on your phone and speak to one of our operators, and your questions will be forwarded to me when they come as you ask them. Going back to the list of 6 things to keep in mind when we're talking to our children, the fourth one is to help your child tell the story of what happened before and after the tragedy. Younger children perhaps will act it out in play. If you see a child repetitively making gun sounds or with dolls or other objects, other play objects, or drawing pictures that show what happened, that's the way that they're working it through and helping themselves come to some understanding of it, and not something that we need to be frightened or worried about as parents. It's very appropriate in that sort of situation to look at that, to ask the child what they're drawing, how they feel about what they're drawing, and to share your feelings too. Again, modeling that both as adults and children, we have feelings. That's okay. We can learn to manage them. Feelings don't need to scare us away. And if this becomes too hard for you, and it very well may, this can be a very frightening thing for us as parents, especially those of you who have your own trauma to deal with. I spoke to someone in the last couple of days who has come from an experience in their own life of living through a war, and this whole thing has been very frightening for them, and trying to help their children through it is made much more difficult by their own fear And should you be in that sort of situation, reach out, get help from someone else. There is absolutely no shame or at least I would hope there would be no shame for any of you to have to say, this is just a little bit more than I can handle. I need some help. And you are not only getting the help you need, you are modeling and teaching your children the importance of asking for help. Let me remind you again, as I will repeatedly tonight, that if you do have any questions and would like to have us address them, please press the zero on your phone at any time, and those questions will come through to us. Going back to the 6 points that I mentioned, number 5 is the importance of the people around you. Reconnect with supportive people in your life, with your community, with your culture, with rituals, with religious practices. Simple things like a familiar bedtime story, a prayer, family tradition to remind you and your child that there is hope in life, connection to a church, synagogue, religious community. Many religious communities at this time of year are celebrating holidays in which the triumph of light over darkness is stressed and emphasized. And it really is no surprise that there is evil in the world, always a horrible shock when we're up against it. But our stories and our rituals and our practices remind us that light triumphs over darkness. And this is an especially good season to be in touch with that. Lastly, the point that I would like you to remember, the 6th point in dealing with your children, is that your child needs you. You are the parent, the caretaker, the guardian, the grandparent, whoever you are in your life. And it may not even be children that are directly connected with you in that way. These may be the children in your neighborhood that you know, the children in a Sunday school class that you teach, or children in a local group that you lead, that you coach, whatever it may be. There are children who know you and who trust you, and be there for them. Love them. If they seem more clingy or more upset, they have reason to be right now. And give them your love and your care and your compassion. Just being with your child is sometimes more important than anything you can say or do. You know, sometimes we as parents can't fix things, but what we can do is be there and provide the love and the encouragement for our children. Remind you again, for questions, please dial 0, and they will be passed forward to me. I do have a question that has come up recently. It sort of ties into something I mentioned earlier, but I will respond to this question and reiterate the point. The question of my kids have not touched their Nerf guns or Nerf bow and arrows for about a year, and a friend just slept over Saturday night, and now that's all they're doing. All they did was play with those guns and bows and arrows all night. What's going on? Do I need to worry? And I just want to reiterate, no, that's one of the ways children deal with and master things that are overwhelming to them is mastery through repetition. And that's just absolutely fine, not something that we need to worry about at all. So if you do have some questions, remember to press 0, and we can answer them at any time. I do want to bring my colleague Elizabeth in for just a moment before going on to the next part of the presentation. She has been in the schools. I've had the opportunity over the past couple of days to talk to many of our school-based clinicians. And I just wonder, what have you seen in the schools? How are the kids on a day-to-day basis that you're seeing managing with this? What would you recommend for their families?
Many of the children are actually very resilient to what's been going on and handling it, surprisingly, I think, better than some of the adults. And they do want to talk about what's going on, and they want to understand the why of it. And when we talk about the why, you can't explain why. But what you can explain is that it was horrific. However, what can we do as a society to be better people? And that's what I've been talking with the students I work with, is how can you as an individual be a good person and express how you're feeling with your families, with your guidance counselors, your social worker, your teachers, your friends, but also take each day and live it the best that you can. And that's what the kids have been wanting to talk about, is how can they change the world. So it's been very sweet.
That is very nice.
Yeah, it's very sweet to watch. And other kids are scared, and they want to be reassured that their school and their community is taking action or is safe. And that is something they just need the reassurance that there are securities in.
Now, you, because you're in the schools much more than I, you have a sort of hands-on knowledge. What can a parent do if they want to know if their child is safe or maybe participate in some way to help schools with the safety planning?
There actually, most of the schools in Connecticut, I would like to say all, but I'm not sure, have some sort of safe climate committee in the school. And that doesn't just deal with some of the hot issues of bullying. It also deals with potential threats to the school or just in general how to create a safe community so that a child can learn and grow. And so you can call your school's guidance department and ask about, well, how can I get involved in creating a safe community for the school? What committee is there that I can join? And even if you can't meet during the day, many of these committees are at night. And many of these committees actually don't even take place at the school. They'll take place at local libraries or town halls. And also your town, see if they have a youth services and get involved if you can. They always want volunteers.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to, again, remind you that if you have additional questions, please dial 0, and one of our operators will take your question and pass it on. I'd like to turn on now to addressing some common issues that come up for children at different ages when they're dealing with trauma and highlight 4 concerns that are pretty typical for preschoolers, for school-age kids, for adolescents, and then end up with 4 concerns that we often deal with as adults and how we can best manage those in terms of working with our children. So for preschool-age children, and you will remember, if you currently have preschoolers in your life or have had at some point in time, that preschoolers are very concrete, that they do not have the ability that develops as we get older to look at a situation and understand that it happened in the past or it happened long ago. They see something on the TV that is representative of some of the things that have been happening lately, and they hear an ambulance go by, and they think that this has happened around the corner from them. If you are elsewhere in the state and you are able to concretize in any way for your preschool child where things happened, for instance, you remember going to that mall up in Danbury where they have the carousel, and it took us about an hour to drive there, where this happened is pretty close to that mall. Something like that, that makes it more real. But for preschool age children, one of the major things that you're going to see is just a general fearfulness. Children may become afraid to be alone. They don't want to be in their own bed. They don't want to go into the bathroom by themselves. They have difficulty going to sleep because of fear. And some advice to parents on that. One thing is to be as calm as you can with your child. Try not to voice your own fears, whether this is fears about the event that has occurred or fears you're having about how this event seems to have impacted your child. Use another adult as your support there, not your child. Remind children that there are people working to keep families safe. For school-age kids, this may be a conversation about how things are safer or could be made safer at schools, who's at work to make sure their school is safe. For younger kids that aren't in school yet, just a reminder that there are people out there whose job it is to keep people safe, the parents, the grandparents, other caregivers, police officers, folks that are at work keeping us safe, that will help their help children not to be quite so frightened. Give your child, as I mentioned before, the words to talk about fears is very helpful. It helps to identify what a fear might be and put it into words instead of just having global anxieties. And give children a concrete way to manage it. For instance, to a preschooler, if you start feeling more scared, come and hold my hand. Come and ask for a hug, something that makes it very concrete. Let me, speaking of fearfulness, we just received a question from Paul in Lisbon, who asks us about his son who has always loved school. And since this event has occurred, he's not wanting to go to school. Let's let Paul voice that and what his concerns are.
Yes, my son was always very interested in very enthusiastic about going to school, and since this event has not been excited about going. In fact, he said he wasn't feeling well and was sick and didn't want to go, but he really wasn't sick, and I could tell that he was just really fearful about going back to school and looking for how I should talk to him about that and reinforce the positiveness about going back to school.
Okay, great. Great question. Let me give a couple of thoughts, and then perhaps Elizabeth may want to add to that. The first is to underline again the importance of keeping our children in school. One of the things that happens with school avoidant behavior is one day missed makes the second day twice as hard to go back and makes the third day four times as hard to go back, and it just keeps building. So best thing to do is keep children in school. One of the advantages we have right now in terms of the school calendar is that in just a few days there's going to be a break for school vacation. So if you possibly can say to your child, can you make it through two more days? I can make it through three more days, and encourage them to do it that way, that's great. Worst case scenario, if they absolutely refuse to go and they end up missing this week, they have a week to recoup before they go back to school, and that will hopefully break the cycle that might otherwise occur. Do you have other thoughts, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I do. Many kids actually have been more fearful about coming to school. They are worried about their safety. And what I've told the parents I work with is talk with your child about that fear. And, I don't know how old your child is, but it might be good to just say, I have a feeling you might be scared because of what happened on Friday. I want to reassure you that you're safe, that we're doing everything we can to keep you safe. And as Tim has mentioned, kind of take advantage of that. It is the holiday season, and schools are doing fun activities the next couple of days. And so, it is a very sad time right now. It's still okay to enjoy the holiday parties in your classroom. It's still okay to go to school and be happy. And it's okay also to be sad, and it's okay to be worried. Many kids just want to hear that you get it and that it's okay to feel confused and scared. And the fact that he's just being hesitant and that he is going, that's actually a normal and good sign that he's probably going to be okay. He just needs a couple of days, as Tim had said, to recoup. And this holiday break is a blessing in some ways, that it's there, and give the kids time to just go back on the second and start the second half of the school year.
Okay, great. Thank you. You actually went on to cover the next point I was going to mention, which is fantastic, about reassurance that we need to give our children. Young children, both preschool age kids and very young elementary school age kids, are not always clear that the danger is in fact over. It happened, and could it still be happening? Could it still be about to recur? So exactly as you're saying, to reassure them that the school is safe, that the danger is over, that they can return, is very important. Let me mention just a couple of other things about preschool age children. And again, a reminder that if you do have questions you would like to ask us, you may dial 0 on your phone, and we'd be glad to respond to them. Many children, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, will have sleep problems, fear of being alone at night, waking up fearful, having bad dreams, and that is entirely normal and a way of managing and processing these issues. Reassure your child that they are safe. Spend some extra quiet time with them together in the bedroom. Maybe let them sleep with a dim light on. And some young children in particular may need an explanation about the difference between dreams and real life, especially the little ones and early elementary school kids do not always have that distinction in mind. So the issue has been raised by some parents I've spoken to, well, my children want to sleep in my bed, should I let them? And that's obviously a decision that each family needs to make on their own. Sometimes I think the children being in the parents' bed is as much for the parents in a situation like this when there's anxiety and fear, and not a horrible thing. However, it can become a pattern that's very difficult to break. And in general, what we recommend is that the parent lay down with the child in the child's bed until the child falls asleep, and then get up and leave the child there sleeping. It doesn't set up a pattern that's going to be more difficult to break. And again, for preschool age children, often, as I mentioned a little bit before, they don't have the words. They're overwhelmed with a feeling, and as the adults in their lives, it's helpful for us to say to them, do you feel happy? Do you feel sad? Becoming concrete, drawing happy and sad faces for them and having them touch which one they feel, giving art materials or play materials, and asking them to draw pictures about their feelings can be very helpful for the preschool-age children as well. Let me move on and talk more about school-age children, and we'll ask Elizabeth for some of her comments as well in this section. One of the major issues that we see with children who are school-age after disasters and tragedies is a fear of reoccurrence of the event and reaction to things that remind them of the event. A car backfiring may cause them to say, are there bullets? Did a gun just get shot? Seeing an ambulance or a police officer go by their school may cause them to wonder, is there somebody racing here for an emergency in my own school? And I've heard some interesting things about from some of our school-based clinicians around the state in the last few days as many schools have upped security in the schools in an effort to make staff and students feel more secure. Some students are responding by saying, this is great, having the police here makes me feel very safe. And other students are responding by saying, if the police are here, there must be a problem. And that may be something you want to talk about with your school-age child of how safe they feel at school and what the increased security precautions are feeling like to them. I did have something raised to me by a parent yesterday, and I wanted to ask Elizabeth what she has seen or heard about this from at her school or from her colleagues in other schools, which is the whole question of confusion about what's happening and making sure we give children the right ideas. I saw a kid in treatment yesterday who asked me, had I heard what happened in Sandy Hook? Somebody went there with guns and shot everybody in the school and then blew up the school. And I was able to set them straight that what had happened was horrible, but not that horrible. And I'm wondering, have you heard things yourself or from others about that whole issue of misinformation and how to manage that?
Well, being in a middle school, there's always a little extra dramatics when they need to process things. And mostly that's the game of telephone that happens. Did you hear this? Did you hear that? And then the media, they're constantly reading it. And some things are not always accurate. I think it is important that kids need, they do need facts. And so when you hear a child being completely misled or just saying something that's not true, don't assume they're lying or making it up to be more dramatic. Just set, as you had said with your client, just set them straight a little bit. Let them know what happened. Simply, they don't need to know the gory details. They just need to know what happened and it was horrible. And that it is best to kind of leave the details out when you do discuss it with your peers, and they are going to, and talk about how they're feeling. Because that's what many of them want to talk about in general, that they are scared. It is shocking what happened. And to go back to what you had mentioned with the more police involvement, and a lot of the kids are experiencing that anxiety and also that push and pull anxiety. Do I feel anxious or do I feel secure? And I think what I've been telling students and staff is to just have the kids feel comfortable asking questions. They are safer if they ask questions. There are people in their school now that maybe they didn't have last week. Go ahead and ask your teacher, who's that officer by the door? Why is he there? And you might decide, well, they're here to make sure the building's secure and they're going to leave after the bell rings. Or, you know, it's just for now. We'll see what happens. And that's something that kids need to hear.
Well, you know, it's great that you mentioned that whole issue of the police and how to address that. We do have a caller from Colchester who has a question about that. So go ahead, please. Are you still there or have we lost you?
Hi, this is Janae from Colchester. My son made a comment today that he saw a police officer at school with a weapon and said that it was scary, and I just wanted to know how I can make sure he knows that they are there to protect him and not to harm them.
I would basically just talk to him what police officers are meant to do. Police officers are meant to protect, and they're there to make sure that everyone is safe and everyone is abiding by the laws. They're not there to do anything other than that purpose. And how old is your son?
He's seven.
He's seven? So I think there's plenty of books, actually, at your local library that would talk about what a police officer's job is that maybe if you can or at your son's school, you could check out and read to him, sometimes using children's books to explain roles of police officers, firemen, and EMT workers is actually one of the best ways for them to understand that a police officer is always going to carry a gun, however that gun is on a safety, and they're not going to use it at your school unless absolutely necessary, and that they're only there to protect you.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And thank you for your question. Going back along about some of the other things that we need to be aware of and prepared to manage with school-age children is that whole issue of somatics complaints, feeling things in their body, especially kids who are not so good at using their words, but even kids who use their words, and frankly, some of us as adults do, get headaches and stomach aches and muscle aches for no apparent reason. And what should be done is, first and foremost, find out if there is a medical reason. Have your child see their primary care provider and make sure that there isn't something medical that we need to worry about. But if there isn't, explain that this is normal and very often happens with people, that one of the ways our body lets us know that we're worried or frightened or scared is by having pain in different places. And let them know that. It could be matter of fact. You don't want to pay too much attention to the pain or the difficulty the child is having physically, because that would reinforce it and would possibly even increase it. So be matter of fact about it and help them to see that that happens. Make sure that your child gets enough sleep, eats well, drinks plenty of water, gets enough exercise, the things that we would normally want our children to do, and for all of us in dealing with stressful situations, it's easy to forget those things. Make sure that we're doing those things, and that will help us with those somatic issues. And lastly, for school-age children, I wanted to mention, and this is really true of all kids, but especially for our school-age kids, they are watching us closely as the adults. They want to see how we are responding. They may not ask questions if we appear to be too upset or too distraught, and which is not to say you have to hide your own feelings and emotions, of course, but perhaps label them. Let your child know, I do have a hard time when I hear about what happened. It does make me sad, and I do cry. And I'm still here for you, and I do want to talk to you about it. And if I cry while we talk, then I just cry because I'm sad. Maybe we'll both cry if you're sad too. And just be as calm as you can. Try not to increase your child's worries. And be, when possible, future-oriented, hope-oriented. Yes, what happened was terrible. Isn't it a good thing that it's done now and that it's not something that is continuing or something like that? That would be more positive. We'll remind the people again that if you do have questions or comments you would like to make, please dial 0 on your phone, and your question would be forwarded to us, and we would be glad to help with an answer to that. I would like to move on. I'm moving through the age range and talk about adolescence. I think Elizabeth mentioned in her work is middle school, and I suspect this is true in high schools as well, that there is drama as a daily life and daily occurrence for the kids in the adolescent stage of life. And one of the things that we should be aware of as people with adolescence in our lives is the whole issue of acting out behavior. When teens in particular have very strong feelings, be it anger, be it fear, sometimes rather than words, it comes out in dangerous behavior, life, possibly risky behavior. And so need to be aware of that. And if you're beginning to see things that look like they're acting out behavior or maybe a child who appears to be accident prone, for a time-limited basis, just kind of keep a watch on your child and see what's happening with that and how to respond to that. Let me jump off this topic for a second because we do have another question, a follow-up question from Paul in Lisbon. Do you want to go ahead and ask that question, please?
Thank you. Yes. One of the things I noticed is that my son didn't want to get on the bus the first day back at school this week, so I actually drove him to school. And then you kind of talked about that pattern of sleeping in the bed. I'm wondering if I'm getting into a bad pattern here because we've been driving him to school each day this week because he really didn't want to go on the bus because he wasn't really enthusiastic about going to school. And is that okay for the rest of the week if I drive him to school, or should I really encourage him to get back on the bus and get back into a normal routine?
I will give you my take on it, and Elizabeth may have the same or different, which is that you're only talking about a couple more days until the break. I would tend not. And if you know that he has friends on the bus, if you know that there are things that he might possibly miss, you know, you can mention that. You ride on the bus and you sit next to so-and-so, and I know you guys have a good time. How about giving it a chance? And if he's still not to want to do it, I wouldn't push it. He just got a couple of days, and even you could even put that limit on him. You know, sure, okay, for the next few days, we'll do this, but once school starts again in the new year, I expect you to be back on the bus. And I think that would be fine. I don't know if that's your take on that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, it's no harm in a couple of days. However, if it's inconvenient as well as it's difficult, what you could do is try, if you can with time, stand at the bus stop with your child. If your child has a bus stop buddy they're close with, reassure them that way that they're safe together and they can get on the bus together. And if he's riding the school bus at home, then I also would be a little less worried as well. So he will eventually, but I do agree with putting the limits on it and letting him know that, okay, once you go back to school in January, it's time to go back on the bus, and we're going to go back to your bus stop, and you're going to get on with this person, and you're going to sit again with your friends and be fine.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Another couple of points with adolescents that are important to think about, and I think it was Anna Freud, you know, famous daughter of Sigmund, who said that adolescence is a developmentally normal psychosis. So almost anything, when we start talking about adolescence, we naturally talk about extremes and people being, in some ways, a little bit out of control. So keep that in mind when I point this stuff out, because some of you may say, oh, my teens are like that all the time anyway, which may be true for some of our teens. But one of the things that often happens after an especially horrific event is that you'll see a change in interpersonal relationships in a family. Teens may somewhat abruptly pull away from their parents, from their other family members, even from their peers. And that's just a way of managing stress. And I think we can explain that strain on relationships is expected in this sort of situation. Everyone in the family should be encouraged to be tolerant of each other, and maybe even say things like, as a parent, to model it, you know, I want to apologize for being kind of irritable and cranky last night. I was really upset by hearing about the funerals on my way home in the car, and that was hard on me, and I guess I came in and kind of took it out on everybody else, and I'm sorry. Or if one child is particularly upset and having a hard time and the other does a really nice job of helping them through, that is an opportunity to catch somebody being good and praise them for it, which is always more effective than jumping on people when they're not doing what they ought to be doing. And saying something like, you know, I really appreciate you being calm last night when your brother just kind of lost it. He's having a hard time, I'm having a hard time, you're having a hard time. And it really helps when everybody pulls together. So that opportunity to call it for what it is. It's a stressful time for everybody, and to acknowledge that. Another thing that is developmentally normal for teens, but plays out especially so in moments of acute stress and anxiety is self-consciousness. I mean, it just kind of goes without saying, if you remember your teen years yourself, that most teenagers are worried about how they're coming across, how they look, what other people are thinking about them, and so forth. And it helps if you see that your teen is frightened or worried or anxious to normalize that. Say, gee, that's a feeling that most people probably have in a situation like this. Or even make it your own and say, I can remember a time that I felt like that. And most of us as adults, although certainly the Sandy Hook situation stands out as a particularly awful tragedy, many of us can remember other things we have heard about or that may have occurred to us that left us having a difficult response or a stress response that we can mention to our child, both normalizing that it happens and at the same time, without necessarily saying it, modeling that we get over it and that life goes on for people. Lastly, for teens, and I just do want to hit this last point, mentioned it at the other age ranges as well, but it doesn't hurt to mention it again for teens, is that whole notion of the fear that something may reoccur or a reaction to reminders that it reoccurred. Children at different ages process things very differently. You know, if you have children of, you know, a 6-year-old and a 16-year-old in your house, you can look at them and see what very different realities they live in. And that's normal, and it's just part of the way that we develop and change as we grow older. And teenagers have made a developmental shift, usually around 13 or 14, and have the ability to stand back and observe things and be a little bit more analytical and look at things from a couple of different perspectives. And that is a very nice strength to play to help them when they're frightened and worried and maybe reacting to reminders about what happened. Is to ask them to identify the triggers, is the way we would say it. What about the situation is reminding you of what you saw on TV? What about it makes you feel frightened, worried, scared? What about the situation could help you see that you don't need to be frightened, worried, scared, whatever it is, and enter into a dialogue with them and help them come up with ways to manage it, maybe even appeal to their analytical skills. You know, let's think together about that news report. And was there any way in it that the story was told that kind of maybe exaggerated it or kind of maybe frightened you with the details that came out about it and that you might be applying to your own life where they really don't apply? Just a different skill, different approach, different way of managing it for a teenager as opposed to a younger child. And let me remind you all again, it's looking to me like we have a little bit more than 10 minutes left, and if anybody does have any questions that they would like to send to us, please press the 0 on your phone, and the questions will come to us, and we would be glad to answer them. I do have a question here that actually will kind of lead into the last section, so let me read this right now. My kids seem okay, but I'm having a hard time dealing with this. How can I help my child when I'm feeling kind of overwhelmed and upset myself with what's going on? And the first thing I would say is maybe building a little bit about what I said earlier about the adolescence and self-consciousness. Don't be self-conscious, of course. You're upset and overwhelmed. This is a horrible thing. And certainly for those that are immediately involved in the situation, it's entirely overwhelming. But even for those of us that are only involved by virtue of seeing things on TV or hearing things on the radio or talking to others, it can be very difficult and be very overwhelming. So the first thing I would say to the person who had this question is, it's okay. Even as Elizabeth mentioned earlier, in the school settings, we've been seeing that in some instances it's the staff that are having a harder time managing what's going on in the children. And different things hit different of us in different places, and that's fine. Reach out for help for other people. Give yourself a break. Do those things that you know give you life and encouragement and strengthen you. Probably each of you listening could make a list of 3 things or 5 things or maybe even 10 things that you know that if you did would make you feel healthier and stronger and more able to cope. And if you were here and I had you write that list, my next question would be, how many of those things on that list are you actually doing? Because knowing them is in no way the same as doing them. So I do encourage all of you out there to take care of yourself by doing the things that you know will give you life and hope and enable you to keep going. And I would remind you again that if you have specific questions you would like us to address, please do punch 0 on your phone, and we would be glad to respond to those. Let me hit some general issues that often occur for adults and talk about some ways that we can manage that so that we can be of more help and assistance for our children. One is that many people I have spoken to are experiencing periods of high anxiety or arousal right now, and to translate that into English instead of psychobabble, what that means is that if you have ever had a period in your life where you went through trauma or you went through very difficult times, and there is something about what has happened in Sandy Hook and what you've been hearing for the last few days that reminds you of it, not that the circumstance is necessarily the same, but you are feeling emotions now that are similar to emotions that you may have felt in the past at times that you were overwhelmed and incredibly stressed. You are, at that moment, having high anxiety and arousal symptoms because of things in your past that have been triggered and have been brought to the light by what's going on. And this may include things like becoming very worried about the present or the future, having trouble sleeping, having trouble concentrating, getting really jumpy and nervous, having your heart start beating, sweating. And fortunately, there are things we can do. We can use breathing exercises and other relaxation skills, just taking the time to inhale very slowly through your nose and fill your lungs all the way down to your stomach and say to yourself, my body is being filled with calm, I'm breathing in peace, and then let it out very slowly and say, I'm letting go of all my anxiety and all my fear. And do this 4 or 5 times, and you will find that you are feeling a lot more calm and a lot more relaxed and a lot more able to deal with whatever is coming your way as you have to help your children or you have to do whatever else you need to do in life despite your own responses to what's been going on. And do that as many times a day as you need to. Another thing that adults often experience, and I know from folks I have talked to and other clinicians here at the Community Health Center that I've spoken to about what they are finding, the folks that they speak to, is many people right now are feeling very overwhelmed by tasks that need to be accomplished, you know, cleaning the house, preparing food, doing paperwork, taking care of children, taking care of older parents, those of us that need to do that, and getting ready for holidays, whatever it may be. And the emotional stress and dealing with the emotional exhaustion that just comes from thinking and feeling in response to what's happened recently can make it difficult just to do the regular daily things. And what we recommend for that is identify what your top priorities are and just make a plan that says, how can I get these things done one at a time, inch by inch, step by step, and maybe right now you'll accomplish half as much in an hour as you would have at other times. And that's okay. Get that half done and give yourself a pat on the back for doing that despite all the other things. There's often for adults a change in attitude, the view of the world, maybe even a change in belief when something horrific happens and kind of shakes us and rattles us. What I would encourage you to do if you find yourself in that situation and the world is kind of reeling for you right now is don't make any major decisions. There's probably very few things you need to decide in the next week or two. Give yourself some time. For many people, and I'm thinking of someone in Danbury I spoke to on Monday, the ability to reach out and help others is a tremendous way to help organize this. And there may be drives going on. There may be opportunities to reach out and do something that will make a difference for the children and the families that have been through this tragedy. I recently heard on the news that there has been a scholarship fund started for children, family members, and others in the school that have lived through this. And there may be some other opportunities as well. Keep your eyes open for them. And that's a way, as adults, that we can have an increased sense of really being able to make a difference in a situation that doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. And the last thing I would say to adults is just monitor yourself. There are many not-so-healthy ways that people deal with stress and anxiety. And I'm thinking of things like using alcohol, using drugs, compulsive gambling, various addictive behaviors that people can easily slide into in times of their own stress. And just be aware of that. I'm not saying that any of you out there listening have this problem or are doing it, but it will certainly make it more difficult to care for the children that we all need to care for if we're not taking care of ourselves and making certain that we are doing what we need to be doing. Let me reiterate again that if anybody does have some additional questions, please dial zero and pass that on to us. We have just a few more minutes left, and I would like to take the time that we have left and just give Elizabeth a chance to say any additional things she may have that she has seen at the schools or at other people she's been talking to that she'd like to let you know would be helpful to the kids that may be part of your life.
I think it's important to try to keep whatever routine you've had normally, would have had this week, try to keep it in place and try to keep the traditions you have for next week in place despite the tragedy that happened. And kids really need that structure, and that's what many of the kids were that I talked to. Actually, today in the group I was running, the kids were wanting to make ornaments for their parents for the holidays. And I said, oh, sure. And then one kid said, is it okay to still be excited that Christmas is coming? And I asked the group, I said, what do you guys think? And all of the kids, and these are 11-year-olds, and they all said, you know, I am really excited. I think it's important for us to try to be happy and move on. And I think that's what is very important coming from a tragedy is realize, we're still here. There's things you can do in your community to help if you'd like. There are always volunteer ways, but the best thing you can do for your family is to keep your routine here and keep it going and let your kids know that it's okay to still smile, it's okay to feel safe, it's okay to be happy, and it's okay to have other feelings too. And that's what I've noticed, that all the kids just want to be validated, that it's okay to have an array of emotions. And it's okay for parents to have the array of emotions as well. It's okay for you to still enjoy the upcoming week.
Thank you. And I would like to reiterate that and say that that is something that I have found to be very important with the families that I've been working this week, here clinically in Middletown, is to help identify what is life affirming, what is building hope, what is enabling us to face the dark that is a part of life, but find within us or within our traditions or within our families those things that enable us to say there's a future to build. There is still a direction that we want to move and are able to move, and I would encourage people to find that and do that. That's perhaps one of the best gifts we can give to our children at this point in time, to continue to point them toward a future at a time when situations like this make it seem so frightening to continue living. So let me close with a reminder that although this conversation may have ended, our willingness to continue to be here and to continue to engage in a dialogue and to work together with you as you face these issues is not disappearing, and we would invite you to contact us on Facebook for CHC Inc. That's CHCINC, and we would be happy to continue this dialogue and to be of any additional service we can be. We'd like to thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you for your questions, and thank you for your attention.